The young man, a dreamer of dreams, stood in front of his older brothers. He was describing every detail of his dream to them. And as he continued the story, he could see in their faces a distaste for every word that he was saying. He already knew that they didn't like him very much, but this just seemed to add to that hatred. He was their father's favorite child, the favored son. He was somewhat sheltered from the real world in certain ways, but not completely naive. He was, you know, he had some intelligence, some experience in life that he had gained from his family. Now, Joseph, his name, he continued in his description, almost impulsively, as his brothers glared in hatred. Now they looked on and saw his beautiful tunic, a gift from their father, for his favorite son. And you could tell that just grew. You know, that anger, that hatred just grew and grew. You can find this story in Genesis chapter 37. Genesis 37, starting in verse 3. Verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. As we know, he was also the son of Jacob's, his father's favorite wife, the wife that he truly loved. Verse 4, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now this coat that was a gift, was meant to be a special gift from his father. But it only seemed to cause problems for Joseph. It seemed to get in his way, be a stumbling block. How is he supposed to make peace with his brothers while being put on a pedestal by his father? The dreams that he had were very vivid. The meanings seemed to be very clear to everyone else around him. And he sometimes wondered, were they in fact from God? Did they really mean the truth? Were they prophetic? Did they really mean that one day he would rule over his brothers, that they would bow down before him and worship? They could see how easy it might have been for this 17-year-old to be filled with pride over such things. This is no doubt a great temptation for this young man. Now soon, his own character would be tested in ways that his brothers didn't even see coming. Joseph had been sent by his father. We come across a part of the story where he'd been sent by his father to go and make sure that his brothers were doing what they were supposed to be doing, checking on them, making sure that they had everything that they needed as they were supposed to be watching over the family's flocks. And you find as the story progresses, dropping down somewhere around verse 16, verse 17, we find that Joseph comes across one of his neighbors and he says, "Oh, your brothers are over here in Dothan." So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. It kind of seems like they were off, you know, doing what they weren't supposed to do at that point. And these were most of his brothers, all except his younger brother, Benjamin, which you don't hear about much until later on in the story. Verse 18, now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. This is how much they hated their brother. They wanted to kill him. They were so jealous of that favoritism. Now, Jacob had brought some of that on Joseph himself, but that's no excuse for how his brothers felt about him. And they looked to each other and they said, "Look, here's this dreamer coming." And they mentioned those dreams. "Come, therefore, let us now kill him," verse 20, "and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams." So they want to make sure, if they can, that those dreams do not come true, because they know what they need. And if they were, in fact, from God, then it would happen, and they didn't want that to happen. Now, thankfully, there was at least some sense of honor in his eldest brother, Reuben. Now, Reuben had his own problems. But he didn't really want to kill his brother. He wanted to try to make sure that his brother would stay alive, not necessarily for the sake of Joseph, because he loved him. There was no doubt some hate there. He was, after all, one of his siblings who wanted to try to stop this dream, but he didn't want to kill him. He also knew that if anything actually happened to his brother, that he, as the oldest son, would have to answer to his father. So he convinced the brothers not to kill Joseph. But they did want to at least, you know, rough him up a little bit. And while Reuben wasn't looking, they took his coat and they threw him in a pit. And we see this coat taken from him, stripped of this burden. At least his brothers probably thought it was some kind of burden. They threw him in a pit when Reuben wasn't looking, and then they sold him. They sold him to a group of travelers, some distant cousins of theirs, far distant cousins, who were on their way to Egypt to make a profit. Now, Reuben definitely wasn't happy about this. He knew he would have to answer to his father. And so they decided they would make a story up to disguise what had happened and pretend they didn't know. Dropping down now in verse 31 in Genesis 37. Verse 31. So they took Joseph's tunic, they killed a goat, a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in blood. And then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father. And we see some of their trickery in this. And they said, "We have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?" Of course, they know exactly what's going on, but they wanna try to get their father to assume, to make an assumption, because then that he wouldn't ask questions if he assumes that, you know, if he comes to his own conclusions. Verse 33, and this is a very sad moment for Jacob. He recognized it. He said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." So he mourned. He tore his clothes, he put on sackcloth, and he mourned for his son, his favorite son, for many days. And you can imagine the brothers perhaps feeling some relief from the dream, some relief from what might come from their brother, but also their own sadness, because they knew that they were lying to their own father. And it wouldn't create any great favors for them in the eyes of their father either way. Verse 35, it says, "And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, 'For I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning.' Thus his father wept for him." Now this is a sad state of affairs for this family. Here we see this family torn apart by pettiness, by crime. Little did they know that God had used their mistake, their error, their jealousy to work his own plans to actually save their own lives. Of course, if they knew that, who knows what they would have tried to do instead. But also God was using this to test his people, to test Joseph, to test his brothers as well, to test their hearts. Now, if there was any pride in Joseph from that coat, from the favoritism from his father, any sort of pride that was that had been developed in his own heart, soon he would be tested. There would be trials that he would go through. And it would reveal what was actually in his mind, in his heart, how he felt about his brothers, about his God, about his family. I titled this message, "Testing of the Favored Son." Testing of the Favored Son. And we're going to look at some of the major tests that Joseph was put through in Egypt. And we'll see how he made it through each of these tests, these trials, these temptations in life. And through those examples, we can see how we are tested in these same ways. These same tests we are put through. And using Joseph's example, we can make it through these same tests cleanly as he did. In Genesis 39, starting in verse 1, we see Joseph now taken down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, so this high official in many ways in Egypt, purchased Joseph from these distant cousins, these Midianite traders, the Ishmaelites, who had taken him down there. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. And this is an important aspect of this entire story. And of course, while we're thinking about our own tests, our own trials, we have to remember that the Lord is with us. If we've drawn close to Him and we seek Him, if we've answered that calling from Him, He is with us. Now it says here in verse 2 that Joseph was successful because of this. He was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So he's there. God didn't spring him from slavery, but He gave him a high position in favor. Verse 3, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So Joseph had this great reputation of a servant, someone who continuously served and honestly. He wasn't trying to gain any prestige, any power, any riches. He was just doing his duty diligently. And so he gained favor in the sight of his master here, his owner. And so pretty soon, everything was in his hands except for himself, except for Potiphar and his wife. Verse 5, so it was from the time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. That sounds like a good deal to him. All he had to do was taking the bread that was on his table, putting it in his mouth, and everything else was taken care of by this servant that God had blessed. And now we come to this first test of Joseph. Joseph had earned the trust of this very important man, Potiphar, the captain of the guard. As we read, Potiphar saw the success that God had given to Joseph. And whatever he touched, it didn't matter what situation that he was put in, God blessed that situation. It didn't matter what work that he was asked to do, God blessed it. Potiphar understood that. He got to know Joseph and understood that he worshipped a different God. Potiphar trusted him deeply. Verse 7 in Genesis 39. And it came to pass, and now we see this test here. It came to pass that after these things, that his master's wife casting longing eyes on Joseph, and he said, and she said, lie with me. So here he comes across this test. Now this will be a test of loyalty, more so than a test of his purity, his sexual purity. This is a test of Joseph's loyalty. So that's the first test. Here, Joseph had to make a decision right then and there. He had to decide. He had to decide who he was loyal to. He could have lain with Potiphar's wife. They could have covered it up and gone on with their lives. But Joseph's loyalty was tested. Firstly, his loyalty to Potiphar. Verse 8, in Genesis 39, verse 8, but he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. So here we see Joseph passing this test of loyalty to Potiphar. Verse 9, there is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. He could have had whatever he wanted except for Potiphar's wife, and he didn't even want Potiphar's wife. Joseph was deeply loyal to Potiphar. But more deeper than that, he was loyal to God. He was loyal to God. Ultimately, this was a test of Joseph's loyalty to his obedience to his God, to his Creator, the one who had given him those dreams, the one who had saved him, even though he was in slavery, who had saved him alive and given him this high position in his master's house. In verse 9, the end of verse 9, He says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He knew that every sin that he would sin would be against God. This is an important lesson for us. And hopefully we understand this. All of our sins are ultimately against God. He'd seen how God had spared his life, and he was deeply loyal to his God, no matter what would happen. And Joseph also knew that his God was mightier than anyone. He knew that God was mightier than his master. He knew he was mightier than this woman that stood before him, that came daily to try to tempt him, to test him, to test his loyalty. Verse 10, so it was, as he spoke to Joseph, or as she spoke to Joseph, day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. So day by day, his loyalty is being tested. He's still doing the work that he has to do, and he's trying to make sure that he never puts himself in a compromising situation, if he can help it. Verse 11, but it happened about this time that when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garments in her hand, and he fled and ran outside. He ran away. Now there's a proverb that says, flee fornication. Run away. If you're ever in this situation where somebody is trying to tempt you in this way or any other way, one of the best things that you can do is run away. If you're able to, run away. And that's exactly what Joseph did. Now, by the way, this is the second garment that Joseph lost in these testings. Seems to be a theme in this story. He keeps losing different garments. He has different changes in garments. Now, this garment, like the first, was forcefully taken from him. Verse 13, and so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. So now she's trying to say that this stranger who was in our house, he's to blame. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she's telling everybody that, look, I have the proof. I have this garment here. I have his clothes. He obviously doesn't have it. So I must be telling the truth. And she repeats the story to everybody until everybody seems to believe her. Now, of course, you know, I don't think we can necessarily blame Potiphar in this situation. He believes his wife. What's a man supposed to do? You know, he believes his wife. He is loyal himself to his own life, or his own wife. But ultimately, regardless of what happened, even in those moments when he is being blamed, Joseph remained loyal to God. So he passed that first test, even when he was thrown into prison. Now what about our loyalty? We should be thinking about that ourselves. What about our loyalty? It's easy to remain faithful to God when other people are around. Well, at least sometimes it is. I think maybe it depends on the situation for us. Sometimes it's because we're worried about what other people will think of us. Sometimes we worry about what our brethren will think of us, our family, our friends. Other times, we gain strength from the examples of our brethren who are also striving to do the right thing. And that's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. But our loyalty to God is constantly tested through our own obedience to Him, most especially when no one else is watching. This is when God sees our true character, our integrity as Christians, as disciples. This is when God truly sees our loyalty to Him. And of course, when we sin, it is against God. But also when we obey, we are demonstrating our loyalty to our God. Now back to our story in Genesis chapter 39. We come across the next situation here. And Joseph comes across another test. Verse 19 in Genesis 39. So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused. Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison. Could you imagine being taken put in prison for something that you didn't do. I've met several people, not too many, but I've met some who have been in prison because of things that they did wrong, and they came to the conclusion that they needed to repent. But what if you were in prison for something that you didn't do? What would be your reaction? Of course, here Joseph didn't get the chance to defend himself. It wasn't that kind of situation. He didn't live in that kind of world. He lived in a world where if you were a slave in your master's house, if your master accused you of something, it was probably either death or prison. You couldn't stand up for yourself. And of course, we know Potiphar sided with his wife over his servant, over his slave. I'm sure that at a certain point the truth came out. If she was an unfaithful wife, I'm sure that she was unfaithful, not just trying to be unfaithful with Joseph, but with other men as well. So Joseph is in prison, and he is tested here. Now he could have struggled at that point. He could have, as his hands are being tied behind his back, he's being bound up. He could have shouted. He could have tried to get the truth out, but he chose instead to accept his fate in this situation, knowing that his words would be useless, but also to trust that God would take care of him even in this place. After all, God had taken care of him when he was sold into slavery here. He knew that God was watching over him. Now here, he could have been bitter with God. He could have said, why didn't God stop this woman? Again, he was being tested here. And we see that he understands that God is trying to do something with him. Joseph here is being tested through his faith. His faith is being tested. His faith in God is being tested. God had seen him through this ordeal. Could he still trust that God would see him through the next part of this test? Whatever might come, would God in fact bring him out of prison at a certain time? Would God fulfill those dreams that he had? These are some of the thoughts that Joseph no doubt had in his mind. He had to decide, did he believe God still? Or was he going to give up? So in this moment, Joseph's faith was tested. He had to learn to again rely completely on God. And of course, we understand, Joseph passed that test. He continued to believe in God. And we see his faith being rewarded by his obedience. Again, God blesses him, even in prison. Verse 21 in Genesis 39. Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. Joseph's faith in God was boosted at this point. God had again given him this favor. It couldn't have been anything that he had done. He's just this young kid. Now, we don't know how old he is at this point, but not much older than the 17 years old when he first started out. But whatever he did, God made it to prosper. And Joseph set a wonderful example of faithfulness, as well as being positive. That's part of remaining faithful to God, is keeping that positive outlook regardless of what happens, whatever situation we are in. Understanding that God can get us out of there. And God has better things for us. Now Joseph could have just sat down in this prison, waiting to die, waiting to be brought away. This is also a testament and a test to his faith. He was surrounded by all kinds of prisoners. Some of them might have been guilty of evil things. And some of them might have just been, falsely accused. Or, just maybe the Pharaoh didn't like them that day, didn't like how they looked at him, so he threw him in prison. This is also part of Joseph's test of his faith. He didn't just sit there and afraid. He went to work. He went to work serving diligently in the prison. I can only imagine that it must have started out with some small task. Maybe he, volunteered for something. Maybe he volunteered to sweep the floor. Just a minor task, or to listen to somebody's woes, answer somebody's questions, do whatever he needed to do in that situation. And pretty soon Joseph was given more and more duties until he practically ran the place. What about our faith? When things seem hopeless to us, do we just shut down? Do we give up and begin to question God? Or do we get to work? Do we put our faith into action? Do we have faith that God will be there with us in those hard times just as much as he is in those easy times, the wonderful times, the times when we receive blessings? Do we become angry at God, or do we trust that he is working things out for our benefit, even in those difficult times? Do we understand that faith without works is dead? If we just sit there and do nothing, even if we understand God's plan, then we are denying our faith. We're refusing our faith. God expects us to demonstrate our faith in life by diligently doing whatever we are asked to do by him. Whatever our job might be in life, whatever our work is, we are supposed to faithfully work as if we are working for God, knowing that we are working for God. Do we have the faith to understand that God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him in their lives? Do we understand that? Do we understand that sometimes we do suffer wrongfully? Even if we don't do something wrong, even if we aren't guilty. 1 Peter chapter 2, you can put this one in your notes. 1 Peter chapter 2 reminds us that it is commendable before God if we suffer wrongfully. Sometimes our faith is tested when we suffer wrongfully for doing the things of God, when those around us don't believe in God or believe differently in what God expects of us. Excuse me. Verse 20 of 2 Peter chapter 2 says, "For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God." We see Joseph's powerful example of that, of taking this wrongful punishment patiently. Not trying to argue or beat somebody else up, but to do his work, regardless of what situation he was in. And he was blessed for that. Now, while he was in prison, Joseph is again tested, a different kind of testing than the other tests. And there were two officers who served Pharaoh directly in very important positions, and they had been imprisoned. The world that they lived in meant that if they angered Pharaoh, they could end up there, and it seems to be the case. These two individuals, the butler and the baker of the king, of Pharaoh, ended up in this prison, and they were placed there with Joseph. And of course, we understand, looking back, that God did that on purpose. Part of the duties of Joseph that he had been given as basically the overseer of the prison, under the overseer of the prison, was to watch over and care for the other prisoners. It seems he was attentive to these other prisoners, to their needs, even listening to their woes, their worries. These were strangers, and sometimes potentially evil men who had done terrible things to end up there, although not all of them. This was a test for Joseph in this situation. He could have said, "Well, my God is mightier than your God." And he could have thought to himself that I am better than you. I haven't done anything wrong. You're in prison here. Joseph's kindness was tested. This is a test of kindness that we see Joseph go through. Joseph, it turns out, was tested in his kindness in a difficult place among difficult people. Genesis chapter 40. We come across the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison in verse 5, Genesis 40, verse 5. And they both had dreams. Both of these men, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. They were different dreams. They had their own meanings. Joseph He came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So we see Joseph's, you know, he's given this choice here. He could have just, you know, thrown their food in there and said, well, good luck. Sorry you're sad. Don't feel better. Could have done that. But his kindness was tested. We see the kind of person that Joseph really was, even around people that might not have cared who he was, might not have cared for him. He chooses here to be kind. So he passes this test of kindness. Verse 7, so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? He asked him. He put in that extra touch of care, kindness. Why do you look so sad today? Probably not, you know, they weren't used to hearing these kind words. Of course, we know that God was using these men for his own purposes. And I think Joseph realized that after the fact when he found out that they were sad over dreams, because that was a way that God had used him, had worked with him all his life. And he knew that God had given him dreams, but also helped him to understand the meaning behind dreams. We also see in this moment humility demonstrated by Joseph. Kindness often comes with humility. He could have easily have taken credit for these dreams, but he gave the credit to God. Remember, he is loyal to God, and so he knew that he couldn't possibly come up with these interpretations of these dreams. Verse 8 in Genesis 40, verse 8, they said to him, we each have had a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. Now, another part of Joseph's kindness was his truthfulness in interpreting these dreams and in giving the interpretations to these men. Part of his kindness was giving them the truth, not hiding anything from them. Now, sometimes we think it's better to lie to people to try to be kind. Now, there's a difference between lying and holding something back. You know, we don't need to just spill everything out all at once. But it is kind to tell people the truth rather than to lie to them. Joseph was kind to these strangers. He delivered the true interpretation of their dreams. To one, he had delivered great news. He was going to get out of prison. He was going to get his job back. He was going to get his regular life back. And to the other, he gave the bad news that he would die. He would be hanged to death. Joseph was truthful and kind in this way. Even in an uncaring place, such as a prison, he took the time to help other individuals out in their moments of need. Now what about our ability to be kind? Our ability to be kind, our kindness is often tested. How often do we have opportunities to be kind to people, to someone else, and we don't take it? I don't mean, you know, when we come across every single beggar, you know, with their hand out, asking for money, asking for this and that, and we couldn't possibly help everyone out. But do we take opportunities to be kind when we come across them? Or do we rather find opportunities to be harsh because we might think that we have better things to do, or that we don't think that the person deserves to be treated with kindness and respect? Now, the greatest example of kindness to us is our God. Our God is far more patient and kind with us than we deserve. We are to become like our God, to become people who are kind. Our ability to be kind to others, whether we love them or not, hopefully we love them anyway, whether we like them or not, we could say, our ability to be kind to others is constantly tested in every interaction that we have with another person. Somebody might upset us, but in that moment, do we just, you know, be upset and walk away? Or be rude to them, or are we still kind to them? That doesn't mean we have to just take everything when they you know, have their own lack of kindness towards us. But are we kind in return? One of the Proverbs says that a soft answer turns away wrath. Kindness has that power to turn away wrath in our lives, in our interactions with people. Our ability to be kind is often tested, even in difficult situations, especially in difficult situations. Just like Joseph, he was put in a terrible situation in prison, but he chose to be kind. Now, his kindness didn't, you know, cause him to compromise. That's also important. That goes along with the test of loyalty. That test of kindness is constant in our lives. Now, of course, we come across a fourth test. There's a fourth test. I didn't tell you how many tests there are that we're going to read through. There are six, by the way, if you're counting. There are going to be six. This is the fourth one. In chapter 40 in Genesis, Joseph speaks to the chief butler. The baker was hanged, just as the dream had foretold, just as Joseph had told him he would be. But the chief butler was released from prison. And as he's leaving, Joseph is appealing to this man's kindness. He's asking him to remember him. Remember me. Show me kindness when you get out. Verse 14, he reaches out to the butler, saying, show me kindness. Verse 15, for indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing wrong here. Finally here, Joseph gets a chance to plead his case a little bit to somebody who he believes will listen to him and show him that kindness that he showed. He's been put in this dungeon without cause, and he just wants some kindness so that he might be released. Now, in his excitement over his life, his position restored to him, the chief butler quickly forgets about Joseph. He doesn't want to remember prison anymore. Who would want to? And he goes on with his life, and Joseph stayed locked in prison, continuing, of course, to serve diligently for 2 years before someone remembered him. Here we see a test of Joseph's patience. This is a test of Joseph's patience. There were times, many times, where he saw God's hand working immediately in his life, handing him high positions very quickly. And through those experiences, he had to learn, and through this experience, he had to learn that God has his own timing in things. God's timing is not always our timing, and that's a test of our patience. And that was a test of Joseph's patience. God has very precise timing. He also considers all the factors that could possibly be considered. And he knows exactly what would happen if you know, his timing was differently. He knows the potential interactions and reactions that we might have, that others might have. We can speculate that if Joseph had gotten out of prison immediately, maybe he would have been successful in whatever he did, as God had planned for him, had given him that favor. But God, of course, needed him for a greater purpose than just this simple, you know, simple success as a, you know, somebody working in a prison or the chief of the guard's house. God had bigger plans for Joseph, and that would take time. And that would take the right circumstance for the right person to have a listening ear to hear Joseph's plea and his abilities and how God was working with him. So Joseph's patience was tested. Now who knows, maybe Joseph, like I mentioned, we can speculate, if Joseph had gotten out sooner, maybe he would have just had a job, you know, working with the Egyptians. Maybe he would have married and just had a nice life. But what then? What then? You know, would God have been able to use him for for greater purposes? What about our test of patience? Patience is a funny thing. I think that, I like to think of myself as a patient person. But then I get upset, usually over something that is trivial, something that I have no control over. We're often patient for a little while, but we struggle with the concept of suffering for a long time, of being patient for a long time, suffering through sometimes the presence of certain people, time and again. Pride is an enemy of patience. Pride comes in and makes us think that we have better things to do, or that we don't have time for another person, or for the things that God has for us. Pride makes us think that If it were up to us, we could get things done quicker and better than somebody else, or even better and quicker than God. That's when we become impatient. We start to squirm, or to start to question God's faithfulness. We have to be careful with that. We have to be careful and realize that God works things out in His time for our good. I alluded to this verse earlier, Romans 8, verse 28. Romans 8, verse 28 says, "We know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose." Not according to our own purpose. Well, hopefully our purpose is also God's purpose. But God works everything together for our good, according to His purposes, but it's in His time. Patience is about being able to endure, but also about being able to let go of control over something that, or someone that we don't have control over, that we can't possibly or shouldn't control. And giving God the control over the things that He has control over. Leaving things to Him that we need to leave to Him. And that, of course, that's easier said than done. And our patience is constantly tested. Now we come across the fifth test of Joseph. Joseph's reputation we see here for being an interpreter of dreams did precede him. Eventually, the butler did remember his kindness. And he, in turn, offered his own kindness by speaking to Pharaoh. When Pharaoh had dreams, it came to mind finally that Joseph, he knew this simple young man who could interpret dreams, and so he is brought before the king of Egypt. Genesis 41, verse 9. Genesis 41, verse 9. "Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, 'I remember my faults this day.' When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put him in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we had each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream." Verse 12, "Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored to me my office, and he hanged him." So because of this, Joseph was brought before Pharaoh. Of course, after a quick shave and a change of clothes. And this is the third outfit that we see Joseph put into. And again, Joseph gives credit to God. He gives credit to God for the interpretation of the dream. And he also eases Pharaoh's mind about things. He told him that God would give him an answer of peace. To ease his mind. Pharaoh began recounting his vivid dream to Joseph. It's actually two dreams that were the same thing twice, but in different ways, different views. And Joseph explained these dreams here. And Genesis 41, verse 32, "And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass." Joseph is telling Pharaoh that this is from God and it will surely happen. That's why you had to dream twice in two different ways. Now that the interpretation was complete, we see a test of Joseph's wisdom. We see a test of Joseph's wisdom. As he explained to Pharaoh that there would be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine, he also explained to Pharaoh that here's a good plan. Wisdom comes in how he approached the plan, the enacting of this plan. He didn't just give the king good advice, this wisdom from God, but he also was careful about how he approached it. He didn't automatically offer up his own service to do the job, putting himself up as the best. He let Pharaoh see that it was wise. And he let his reputation that God had given him through those blessings that he had provided, he let that reputation be Pharaoh's own idea. So Pharaoh hired him. And this was wise, because if you're standing before a king, it is better not to open up your mouth right away, not too quickly. Because just like that, the butler and the baker, Pharaoh could easily just put you into prison or have you hanged because he didn't like how you looked at him or because he didn't like what you said. And so here, Joseph's wisdom is tested. And he passed the test, of course. He didn't automatically offer up his service for the job. He didn't try to sound smarter than he was to say that he was the right man for the job. Pharaoh saw that there was potential in him. And he understood his wisdom was good. It was sound advice. Joseph let others sing his praises. This is wisdom here. Genesis 41, as we continue on in verse 37. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, now that, by the way, this is a different God than Pharaoh knows, but he understands there's something in this man. The God that he worships is using him and giving him wisdom. And he understands that his God is with him. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you." So Joseph lets Pharaoh sing his praises rather than trying to hold himself up as self-important or as the smartest or the wisest. Verse 40, Pharaoh continues on here, "You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And again, God lifts Joseph up into a high position. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." This was, of course, inspired by God. Joseph, of course, later on came to understand this fact. If Joseph had tried to volunteer himself, even under Pharaoh, or somehow foolishly implied that he was the best man for the job, Pharaoh might have been angered. He would have put him back in prison. The whole story would have been off. It takes wisdom. It takes wisdom to know when to speak up and when not to speak. It takes wisdom from God to discern how to approach a subject or an individual in a way that will be a benefit to ourselves and the other person, easing their mind and giving them insights, such as we see with the situation with Joseph. It takes wisdom to be careful with our words, especially when standing before a king, but it doesn't matter who we're standing before. So our wisdom is often tested this way. What have we passed that test? Do we use our wisdom properly? The wisdom that comes from God. Of course, wisdom is the proper application of knowledge. God gives us great knowledge, and he also gives us the understanding of how to use that knowledge in our lives. And knowledge is useless unless we know how to put it into practice and we actually use it. And godly wisdom comes from God, and this is the best kind of wisdom. We can also gain wisdom from life experiences, put that into practice. But it's far better to gain wisdom from other people's experiences. It's far wiser to gain wisdom from other people's experiences. As we're doing today, going through the story of Joseph, we take wisdom from the experiences of wise people and also the experiences of foolish people so that we can understand, well, I better not do it that way or the same thing might happen to me. Our wisdom is constantly tested in the decisions that we make in life. When we open our mouth, our wisdom is tested. Or whether we keep our mouth closed, sometimes our wisdom is tested that way. Well, if we always open our mouth in every situation, we're quick to answer without thinking things through, without taking a moment to understand the situation and answer wisely. Sometimes we are shown to be a fool. I think there's a proverb about that. You know, if we open our mouth, sometimes people will know that we're foolish. But if we keep it closed, then they think we're wise, even if we're not. So there's some wisdom for us there. Now one proverb here, Proverbs 26, read this, along these same lines of knowing when to answer or when to not answer. This takes the wisdom from God. And we can ask God for this wisdom in whatever situation we come in. Proverbs 26, verse 4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him." So if we open our mouth and argue with a fool foolishly, then and we'll be like that fool. Now the next verse seems to contradict it, but it doesn't actually. It depends on the situation. Verse 5 in Proverbs 26, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. I think that the big difference is how we answer. If we answer a fool and just intend to argue foolishly, to put the other person down with the wrong intent, then we ourselves become fools. But if we answer wisely in the right circumstance, especially if somebody, you know, if somebody comes and they might answer foolishly, but they're willing to learn, if we don't give an answer, then they won't learn from us if we understand what the truth is. Verse 12 in the same chapter says, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. The wisdom that we need comes from God. If we are wise in our own eyes, if we put ourselves up as self-important, as more important, and better than other people, if we think that we have more wisdom than them, we're foolish. And there's more hope for a fool, somebody we might consider to be a fool, than for us, if we're wise in our own eyes. Now we should note, at this point in the story, Joseph was about 30 years old, and he stood before Pharaoh. So he's been at this for a while, he was in prison for a while, he worked under the captain of the guard for a while, and now he's again serving in Egypt, and he's 30 years old. I forgot to do the math to figure out how many years he was there, but we can figure that out later. Now we come across another test for Joseph. Another test. We know God, in all his wisdom, had coordinated Joseph's life to bring him to this point. And Joseph, thankfully, was a wise, humble, loyal individual, willing to serve God and to serve however he needed to, in whatever capacity he was given. So God was able to use him and bring him along. God had made this young man, this dreamer of dreams, governor over the land of Egypt. And after 7 years of plenty, and as 7 years of famine began, the famine started taking a toll on the people. Now the Egyptians had plenty. Joseph had wisdom to save up for 7 years so that they had plenty of food. An abundance. They were even able to sell grain to other nations. The neighboring lands, the people of other lands, started coming to Egypt because they knew that they had food. And guess who shows up in Egypt? At Joseph's door. His brothers. His brothers. Genesis 42, verse 6. Now Joseph was governor over the land. And it was he who sold to all the people of the land. That was one of his jobs. He interacted with people. He oversaw the sale of the grain. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him. Here we see the fulfillment of one of Joseph's dreams. His brothers came and they bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. If you go back, hopefully you go back after this and read of Joseph's dreams, you see that his dreams were about this. And so this is finally fulfilled. And Joseph saw his brothers and he recognized them. But he acted as a stranger to them, and he spoke roughly to them. Then he said to them, where do you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. Now maybe he had in mind that he was going to take vengeance on his brothers at this moment. Maybe he would just go take it that far. Punish them, put them in prison, sell them into slavery. And here Joseph's pride is being tested because he couldn't have done that. He has all this position, he has the power, his pride is being tested. Ultimately, thankfully, Joseph passes the test. He could have done whatever he wanted to his brothers. He could have given them a taste of what he endured. It did to a certain degree, but he used it to bring his whole family to Egypt so that he could be a blessing to his entire family. And he begins to see how God orchestrated everything so that his family could be saved alive during this time of famine on the land. Joseph's pride is tested in this situation. Pride can cause us to do all kinds of things that we normally would not do or wouldn't think that we would do. Joseph had this chance to take vengeance. After all, they plotted to kill him. They brought him into slavery, sold him into slavery. But he does realize that it isn't in his hands to take vengeance. He doesn't actually want vengeance on his brothers. If he did try to get vengeance on them, then he would be no better than his brothers who had sold him, who desired to kill him. And Joseph, in his humility, understands that God has used him to bring his family into safety. Above all, God had given Joseph a position to serve, this great position. And through raising of him to that position, God is demonstrating his power, even over Pharaoh. In a way, God manipulated Pharaoh through dreams of Joseph, through positive things for him. He manipulated Pharaoh for his benefit, for God's benefit, for Joseph's benefit. And what if pride had gotten in the way? Then Joseph's family would have died. Maybe he would have gotten vengeance on his brothers, but his family would have died. Now, he could have done that. He could have easily put them in prison and let them rot there, beaten them, had them killed, sold off, whatever he wanted. He was able to set aside any of those bad feelings. He was able to set aside his pride. And God used his position to save his people. I'm sure God could have done it a different way, but this is the way that God chose to do it. And again, this was a test. Joseph's pride was tested. Thankfully, he passed the test. Our pride is often tested. We'll get to the end of this story here. If we have time, we go through the whole thing. That's your homework. You can go through the story. Our pride is often tested. Pride inhibits us from building relationships. That's very important to understand. Pride can inhibit us from building relationships with other people, from loving one another. Pride can get in the way of showing kindness. It can get in the way of loyalty. It can get in the way of patience as well. Pride gets in the way of doing what's best for another person over ourselves. Pride can also get in the way of allowing God to work with us and through us, doing his work. Our pride is constantly tested and tried in this way. And pride can ultimately get in the way of our relationship with God. It takes humility to have a relationship with our Creator. It's not something that we deserve, something that we've earned or have a right to. It is something that God desires, but it takes humility on our part to actually have a relationship with God. Pride gets in the way of that completely. How often do we set aside our own pride, set ourselves aside for the needs of others? Now, that doesn't mean that we don't take care of ourselves. One of the admonitions that God has for us, I think it mentions husbands specifically. Husbands are supposed to care for their wives as their own body. All of God's people are supposed to love other people, care for them as we care for ourselves, as we love ourselves. So we, of course, have to take care of ourselves, but we have to make sure that we're putting our pride aside and taking care of the needs of others. And there are times where we do need to care for others above our own safety, above our own situations. How often do we let our own selfishness get in the way of that? How often do we let our own selfishness get in the way of letting God use us for his purposes? That can happen far too often. Too often, we worry about our own things. We pay attention to what we have going on rather than paying attention to what God has going on. We have to understand that God's thoughts are far above ours. You put in your notes Isaiah chapter 55, where this is discussed. Pride tries to tell us that our ways matter more. Our pride is tested in that way. One of our biggest tests of pride in all of this is our willingness to change when we find we're wrong. Or when we aren't doing what's right for another person, do we have the humility enough to change? On understanding that pride gets in the way of our own repentance. And ultimately, it gets in the way of showing other people godly love. And in God, in His ability to have a relationship with us, to show the love that He desires to give us, our pride can get in the way of that as well. Our pride is often tested, just as Joseph's pride was tested. Sometimes it's when God puts us in high positions. Other times it's just when we think that our position is better than somebody else's, our pride is tested. Now Joseph received several tests here. I listed six of them. His loyalty was tested. His faith was tested. His kindness was tested. His patience was tested. His wisdom was tested. And lastly, his pride was tested. At the end of the story, Joseph understood the purpose behind what God was doing. God was coordinating his life to benefit the lives of others. If his loyalty had gotten in the way, God would have used somebody else. He could have used somebody else, but he wanted to use Joseph. He was loyal to God, so that was possible. He had faith in God regardless of the situation. He was kind to people, even though he was put in situations. He was put in prison wrongfully. He had patience, eventually understanding that God's timing works out perfectly. He used wisdom from God rather than putting his own foot in his own mouth, getting in his way. And ultimately, he passed the test of pride, not putting himself above the needs of his family, not putting his own anger potentially in front of the work of God. And at the end of the story, he understood that God coordinated all these things. Genesis 45, we'll read the end of the story here. And as we're reading this, this should help us to look at the big picture in our own lives as we go through these same tests. Do we understand that God is coordinating things for our benefit? Ultimately, so that we can be part of His kingdom and part of His family. Genesis 45, verse 5, as Joseph is addressing his brothers, as he's coming to this realization and explaining things to them, he says, "But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves." They're finally feeling bad. They're feeling bad for what they had done to Joseph because they sold him into slavery. He said, "For God sent me before you to preserve life. For those 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting." This was a severe famine. Verse 7, "And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And He has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." So we see God's hand in all these things. Hopefully, brethren, we see God's hand working in our lives as we are put through these same tests, as our loyalty, our faith, kindness, patience, wisdom, and pride are tested in our lives.